Okay. It looks like we're in the clouds. So we can begin. The shir is devoted to Makas Bechoros, or if you will, the role of the firstborn child. And the Rav essentially laid down a fundamental principle distinguishing between the concept of Bechor from the Torah perspective, from a Judaic perspective, from a Jewish perspective, and contrasted that with the Bechor of the non-Jewish world, the Bechor of Egypt, the Bechor of all non-Jewish nations, etc., etc. So initially the Rav pointed out that the Torah has many, many mitzvahs that are related to Yetzias Mitzrayim. Undoubtedly, all of you are aware of probably, literally, scores of mitzvahs that are rooted in Yetzias Mitzrayim. Clearly, Matan Torah, Aseres Adibros, the Torah begins in Parshat Yisro. There are two presentations, as you're well aware of, one in Yisro and one in Bas Chanan. The one in Yisro, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Hotzei Sicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. So Hashem connected with us in a very personal kind of way, namely delivered us from bondage of Egypt, and that's the Anochi Havaya Lokecha, Yudke Vavke, which of course is Midas HaRachamim, and even though the bondage itself was Midas HaDin, but at the end Hashem combined both of these qualities, Midas HaRachamim with Midas HaDin, and He took us out of Egypt. And this principle, the Yetzias Mitzrayim, is found many, many times in Chumash and the Rav, essentially try to typologically even categorize the different categories which are associated with the Yetzias Mitzrayim. For example, Mincha of Yom Kippur. I assume you're familiar with the fact that in the morning of Yom Kippur, we read about the Avodah of Yom Kippur, the Avodah Sayom, which is found in Parshas Acharemos. But in Mincha of Yom Kippur, we talk about a Parsha, also in Acharemos, that speaks about forbidden sexual relationships. And there the Torah introduces that with the following language. The Torah tells us not to emulate, not to simulate the ways of Egypt, the mores of Egypt, the culture of Egypt, the hashkofa of Egypt. And the Torah indicates that, especially in the area of sexual relations, of immorality, of behavior that was absolutely grotesque in many, many respects. And that is connected to Mitzrayim. Kimase Eretz Mitzrayim Asher Yishavtem Bo Lo Sasu. And that's in Acharemos. In Parsha Shmini, when the Torah describes the fact that we have an entire kosher code, a code of macholos that we're supposed to eat, and obviously macholos that are asur, that are prohibited, that we are interdicted from eating. So the Torah says there, use the following language. Al tishaktsu es nafsho seichem b'chol asheretz asheretz al aretz v'lo sitamu bahem b'nit meisem bom. That we should not become detestable, we should not become abominable by virtue of the kind of food that we eat. Namely, we should not eat non-kosher food because that could lead to what the Gemara calls in Yuma timtum halev, if you will, a kind of spiritual hardening of the arteries, spiritual atherosclerosis. That's what will happen. And the Torah goes on and explains the rationale for it. Ki ani Hashem, that I took you out of Mitzrayim, v'iskadishtem v'isem kedoshim, ki ani Hashem hamalei eschem eretz Mitzrayim, that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, v'isem kedoshim ki kadosh ani. So the language of both these parshios, the one that I began with in Acharemos, which is the one that I just referred to now, and the earlier one, namely Matan Torah, Aseres Adibros, the Torah indicates to us that we have to distance ourselves from the mores of Egypt and those that are related to Yetzias Mitzrayim. So too, many, many mitzvos, when Hashem actually warns us to discipline ourselves, and that's really what Kedoshim Tiyu is all about. The idea of Kedusha is the idea of self-discipline. And we're told to discipline ourselves and not satisfy all of our corporeal drives, all of our physical drives. We have to try our best to control our physicality. And we have accepted man in total. We recognize that man is both guf and neshama, both body and spirit. So according to our hashkafa, the body has to be disciplined. And a disciplined body, said the Rav Zatzal, is capable of retreating from pleasurable actions, even though there are many, many pleasurable actions that we would enjoy doing, but the Torah has essentially forbidden us from engaging in those activities. We're talking about carnal pleasures, sexual pleasures, other bodily pleasures, and all these, the Torah says, will lead to defilement. These are elements that are connected to Mitzrayim, to non-Jewish nations, and that's the entire enterprise of Macholos Asuros, the Pasha of dietary laws, and the Pasha of sexual morality. And the Rambam, by the way, interestingly enough, where did the Rambam include all of these dinim that I just described? The Rambam includes them in a sefer called Sefer Kedusha. The Rambam there talks about laws that deal with both of these areas, namely dietary laws, and unquestionably, the areas of sexual morality as well are under the rubric of Kedoshim Tiyun. They all relate to our becoming V'anshei Kodesh Tiyun Li. The Torah said we should be Anoshim Kedoshim. What Rav Shimshon Feld Hirsch, that's how I used to call Heiliger Menschen, holy people. That is the ultimate mandate. That's the ultimate goal. That's what we're striving for. So the Rav said, to create a disciplined mind, which is what he tried to do with his Talmidim, and Baruch Hashem, I think he did it relatively in a successful kind of way, that's not so difficult. But Judaism, Yadus, the Torah was interested not just in disciplining the mind, but in disciplining our body. Taking physiological functions that are part of the primitive drives of a human being and converting them into an Avodas Hashem. Using the physicality that we have, using our material self, using our physical self, and essentially dedicating it to Hashem Yisbarach. Rav Soloveitchik cited a Rambam in Hilchos Deos, the Rambam in Mishnah Torah. The Rambam indicates that there's one pasuk that more or less encapsulates or has really a precy of the ultimate mandate of Hashem Yisbarach. The Rambam there describes how a Jew should comport himself. What should be the deportment of a Jew, both in terms of how he speaks, how he eats, how he carries himself, how he interacts with others. And the Rambam goes on in a rather graphic and dramatic and majestic description of the type of behavior that a Jew should strive for. The Rambam then cites a pasuk, "Bechol drachecha da'eyu, v'hu yiyasher or chosecha." One should know Hashem is Baruch in every single facet of one's life. When one eats, when one drinks, when one sleeps, in one's interaction with other human beings, in one's connection with one's spouse, every single aspect of our lives is governed by a striving for Kedusha. In other words, we should find Hashem not only in, shall we say, in Shul, when we are davening Ne'ilah, on the, essentially after we've underwent an entire day of fasting, of Tanis, an entire day of Tefillah, of connecting to Hashem Yisbarach, but we have to find Hashem in the dining room, in the bedroom, in our public lives, in our private lives, in the area of Macholos Asuros, in the area of sexual morality, because essentially the Rav said, if you look at all pagan religions, and this is unquestionably a very generalized kind of statement, but it's definitely true. All pagan religions, at the end of the day, what was the ultimate that they were striving for? Pleasure. Pleasure is the ultimate end. They deified pleasure. They almost made it into a kind of god. That was the highest norm. And as a result, they developed what Rav Soloveitchik called a voluptuous way of life. They engaged in activities that promised pleasure. That was the ultimate end. The ultimate end goal is pleasurable experiences. What they call there in Eretz Yisrael, kef, to have fun, to have a good time, to have a great time, to enjoy life. And again, there's nothing wrong with enjoying life. But that enjoyment of life has to be accompanied by striving for Kedusha, by knowing what the limits are, by knowing what the boundaries are, by circumscribing those kinds of activities in a way which gives it a kivun, a direction of Kedusha. So these are areas that are connected to Mitzrayim and to Yetzias Mitzrayim, both of the areas that I just described, the areas of Macholos Asuros, non-kosher, forbidden foods, the area of sexual morality, and we know the world at large certainly to a large extent. In both of these areas, they are clearly and very openly, completely not in sync with our perspective, with our hashkafa, with our perspective on both of these matters. Another area of mitzvahs that's also very much related to Yetzias Mitzrayim, the idea of Shabbos. We know that the Torah speaks about the obligation of observing Shabbos many, many times in Chumash. And unquestionably, Shabbos is also connected to Yetzias Mitzrayim. And Chazal speak a lot about what exactly was happening there in Egypt when we were subjected to bondage in terms of Shabbos. The idea of Ahavta Mesager, the notion that we have to love a ger, the Mishnah writes in Maseches Krisos that Mishloshim Mishisha Mekomos, his hero Torah Alonah Sager, 36 places the Torah tells us not to maltreat a ger, a proselyte, a convert, someone who converts to Judaism. Why? That also, the concept of gerus is related to our experience in Egypt, what we were subjected to, and what we saw, and what we experienced. And as a result, from that experience, we have to learn the ultimate in how to interact with other people with the greatest kindness, with chesed, which is boundless. So these are all memorials for Yetzias Mitzrayim. So we have many, many mitzvahs that are clearly nurtured and founded on the doctrine of remembering what happened in Mitzrayim. So let you give a number of other examples. In Parshas Ki Tzeitzei, the Torah tells us when it comes to justice, when it comes to principles of a Beit Mishpat, principles of a judicial, of a court system, of a juridic setup, Lo Satem Mishpat Ger Yosem Almona. We're not allowed to in any way, Chas V'Shalom, when we judge, we have to judge objectively, dispassionately, fairly, without any bias, without any prejudice. Why? The Torah goes on to say, "V'zacharta ki eved ha'yisa b'mitzrayim al kein anochi mitzav chalasos es adaber azeh." And those essentially, the injunctions of justice and charity are primarily founded upon exactly what happened in Egypt, and we are obligated to derive literally almost the antithetical kind of behavior that we should govern ourselves with, namely mishpat and yashrus and tzedek. Pashas Mishpatim as well, the Torah speaks of a similar kind of injunction. Beger lo soneh velo silchotzenu. Do not oppress a ger. Do not oppress someone who decided to join our faith community, become a member of Klal Yisrael. Why? Ki gerim ha'yisem ve'eretz Mitzrayim. Again, the Torah traces this back to what happened in Egypt. So we have many, many mitzvahs subsumed under the rubric of Kedusha, as we described a few moments ago. On the other hand, we have mitzvahs that are in the area, in the gender of justice and charity, all rooted in Yetzias Mitzrayim. So both of these ideas, namely on the one hand, Kedusha, on the other hand, justice and charity, what we call Mishpat, encompass the entirety of Judaism. So to a large extent, one could say that probably the entire body of Tariq Mitzvahs is very much associated with Yetzias Mitzrayim. When we speak about Shabbos, as we mentioned earlier, Zochas Yom HaShabbos Lekadsho, and we have two parshios, one in Yisro, one in Reis Chanan, and unquestionably, there's Shabbos Bereshis, that, and the Shabbos, of course, the Torah speaks about Asher Otzeisichom Eretz Mitzrayim. Again, on Shabbos, our inner spiritual persona is enhanced, is exalted, and the principles of justice that we mentioned as well, and charity, Gavon Beinam L'Chavero, and all this, every one of the above items that I mentioned, said Rav Soloveitchik, is associated with Yetzias Mitzrayim. There's another group of mitzvahs he mentioned that's also associated with the Exodus that serves as a reminder of the Exodus, a kind of symbolic memorial, namely all the Yomim Tovim. Every single Yom Tov is connected to Yetzias Mitzrayim. Undoubtedly, you're aware of the Shemoneh Esrei of every single Yom Tov. We mentioned Zeicher Yetzias Mitzrayim. Pesach is fairly obvious, the connection to Yetzias Mitzrayim, but the other Yom Tovim as well, Shavuos and Sukkos, are also connected to Yetzias Mitzrayim. Pesach is fairly evident because in this week's Parsha of Bo, that we're going to lay in this Shabbos, we have the prohibitions of Chametz, we have the entire presentation of the Korban Pesach, we have Achilas Matzah, and regarding the other Yom Tovim as well, they are connected very much so to Yetzias Mitzrayim. When the Torah in Parshas Emor speaks about the mitzvah of sitting in a sukkah, so the Torah says, "Basukos teishu shivas yomim, kol ha'ezroch b'Yisrael yeshu basukot, leman yedu doroseichem, ki basukos hoshabti es b'nei Yisrael, b'hutzi osam eretz mitzrayim, ani Hashem elokeichem." The Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Yud Aleph, has a machlokes whether the sukkahs that the Torah refers to are sukkahs mamish or Anani Akavod, either the clouds of glory that accompanied us, or actually booths that we constructed, that we built. But the Torah indicates very clearly that the basis for this Yom Tov is the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was kind enough to provide for us all these booths. So these are direct reminders of Yetzias Mitzrayim that reflect the Yetzias Mitzrayim experience. And of course, we're obligated, as we all know, on the Leil HaSeder, the obligation of Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim, which Rav Soloveitchik always articulated as being re-experiencing and reenacting Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's the obligation on Leil HaSeder. Matter of fact, the language of the Mishnah in Ari Psochim, which many of you have already studied, that Chayav Adam Liros Esatzmo Ki'ilu Hu Yotzam Ni Mitzrayim. Or in the Nusach of the Rambam, that Rav Soloveitchik always was medaktik, in that Nusach, Chayav Adam Laharos Esatzmo Ki'ilu Hu Ata Yotza Mishibu Mitzrayim. The Leil HaSeder experience vicariously is a re-experiencing, reenactment of Yetzias Mitzrayim. We try to, through those mitzvahs that we perform on the Yom Tovim, to relive Yetzias Mitzrayim, to reenact and re-experience, and they are practiced dafka b'mo adam, in their season, in their time. So here again, we have something which is clearly connected, Yom Tovim, to Yetzias Mitzrayim. The function of the Shia that I heard from the Rav was essentially to focus on one specific element that's found in this week's parsha, and that's relevant to these parshas, and that is Makas Bechoros, the idea of that Hashem spared every Jewish Bechor, but that night, Leil HaSeder, Vayarug Hashem kol Bechor be'eretz Mitzrayim, Mibchor Adam ad Bechor Behema, Al Kein Ani Zoveach Hashem kol Peterechem Aschorim, and that's the end of the parsha, of this week's parsha of Bo, the last number of Psukim. And we know every morning when we put on tefillin, what parshas do we say? Hopefully we all have enough time if we arrive in shul a little bit before. Kaddishli kol b'chor, peter kol rechem b'nei Yisrael, b'adam v'abei malihu. That's a parsha, this week's parsha's Bo. And v'ayu kiviyacho, and the idea of zochres hayom hazeh, she'itzosim b'mitzrayim, and the idea of tefillin, the last series of psukim in this week's parsha, "Va'yilcha la'osal yadicha u'l'tatavz be'inecha ki b'chozik yad halsiyanu Hashem yimitzrayim." So these two elements, these two components, are directly related and connected to Yetzias Mitzrayim, namely component of bechor and component of tefillin. So Rav Soloveitchik focused in this shiur on the idea of bechor, and he analyzed the relationship between Yetzias Mitzrayim and the fact that there's an obligation to sanctify the Bechor. Anyone who's the firstborn, so he is Kadosh, he has a certain Kedusha. The Rav always used to point out, to understand the mitzvah is not simply to ask the question why, because we cannot ask of an omnipotent, omniscient, all-powerful being why. That would be a silly thing to do, that would be even ridiculous. Rav Soloveitchik said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu lacks nothing, desires nothing, everything is encompassed by him. He is a kol yochol. So in effect, we're not asking the question of why, but rather we are really trying to define, we're asking the question what. In general, Judaism does not answer the why question. It answers the what question. To understand the mitzvah is to understand it, not to explain what the cause of this mitzvah, why this mitzvah was chosen, the particulars of the mitzvah. We just have to come to certain conclusions regarding mitzvahs and that we can do and that we are mechuyev to do, that we're obligated. The scientist is the one who asks the why question. He wants to know what is the causal nexus. Namely, he's looking to see what the cause of this COVID-19 is, whence it cometh from, what the source of it is, etc., etc. But that's not the question that we are asking. We are our B'nai Torah. We want to understand what exactly is this all about. What is the message Hashem telling us? The Ramban writes in Parshas Ki Tsetse, a very well-known passage, where he obviously argues with the Rambam. He's talking about the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein. The Torah says, Ki Ikori Kansipo Lefanecha. So the Torah tells us, Lo Sikach Ha'em Al Abonim. That's allowed to take the mother with the child. Shaleach Tishalach Ha'em Yes Abonim Tikach Loch. You have to send the mother away, and then you can take the children. That's one of the mitzvahs that the Torah promises us. So why the Torah commanded us in Shiluach HaKein is not a question that we can ask. That's a foolish question, the Rav said. However, what is our obligation? What do we learn from the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein? What moral lesson is to be derived? That's a proper question. That's an appropriate question. Why is not a proper question? What should I feel when I carry out the mitzvah? What kind of feeling should this mitzvah evoke? Should this mitzvah engender? Should this mitzvah generate in me? Experientially, what should be my response, my reaction when I fulfill this mitzvah? That is the what question, and that's a very significant question which all of us are obligated to try our best to fathom and to ferret out. So to understand the concept of Bechor, we have to understand, Rav Soloveitchik said, something else. Namely, Makas Bechoros, when we look at the Psukim, then we'll have perhaps some insight into this doctrine of Kaddishli Kol Bechor. Why every Bechor has to be sanctified? Why every Bechor has a Kedusha Merechem, has an inherent sanctity from the moment they are born? And the Torah tells us, because of what Hashem did in Mitzrayim, Vayarek Hashem Kol Bechor Be'eretz Mitzrayim, Mibchor Odom Ad Bechor Behema, every firstborn was killed, whether it was a human Bechor or an animal Bechor, Al Kein Ani Zoveach Hashem Kol Peterechem Aschorim, Bechol Bechor Bona Efter. So why did Hashem punish the firstborn? Why were they responsible for the torture, for the slavery of the Jew in Egypt? That's a question which is legitimate and a question which should be asked and a question that has to be answered as well. There's another difficult series of psukim, and these are also important to resolve, even in the context, in the very beginning of Sefer Shmos, right in Parsha Shmos, you undoubtedly remember, it's only a few parshas ago, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when does he encounter Moshe Rabbeinu, when does Moshe encounter Hashem? In the context of the snet, of the thorn bush, the Torah describes that Moshe Hayaro has told Yisrael Chosno Kohen Midyan, Vayinag Satzon Achar Midbar, Vayavo Al Har Elokim Choreva. Moshe Rabbeinu came to Har Sinai, and then Vayiro Malach Hashem Elo Balabas Eish Mitoch Asne, a Malach comes to him, Vayar Vine Asne Bore Baish, Vasne Einenu Ukol. Here we have a thorn bush that is consumed by fire, but the thorn bush is not consumed. In terms of its integrity, it remains a thorn bush. And Moshe Rabbeinu is very curious. Madu alo yuvar asne, vayar Hashem kisor liros, and then Hashem appears to him, vayikra lelkim mitoch asne, vayomer, Moshe, Moshe, vayomer hineni. So Moshe Rabbeinu at that point is then essentially encountering Hashem the first time, and he is at that point deputized to being the Goel Yisrael. He's going to be the Man Yisrael, who's going to take Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu remonstrated with Hashem. He did not want to accept this position. And there's almost a debate back and forth. And finally, there's an agreement and Moshe Rabbeinu accepts and acquiesces to the Ratzon of Hashem Yisbarach. A bit later, the Torah tells us, Moshe Rabbeinu first goes back to his father-in-law, Vayelech Moshe, Vayoshev Yeser Chosno, and he indicates to him that he's now about to take on this mission. And he asked permission from his father-in-law. This is also a very fundamental yisod of Hakaras HaTov. Since his father-in-law opened up his doors to him, Moshe Rabbeinu was required, al pi din, al pi alocha, al pi musa, al pi derech eretz, to ask his father-in-law permission. And then the Torah goes on and tells us what exactly was involved in this mission. Moshe was deputized to come to Zikna Yisrael, and he was then deputized to go to Paro, and tell Paro, v'ato nelchana shosh yamin b'midbar, he asked for a three-day furlough. V'nizbuchal Hashem Elokeinu. And Hashem tells him already, v'ani adati, Hashem says, I know, ki lo yitein eschem elch mitzrayim lahaloch. He's not going to simply let you go. He's not going to release Klal Yisrael from Avdus. He's not going to simply let the servants be emancipated. And then the Torah tells us, Moshe Rabbeinu goes to his father-in-law, tells him what he's going to do. His father-in-law tells him, Lech L'Shalom. And then Hashem tells him, go to Mitzrayim, because all the people who are pursuing you, because Moshe Rabbeinu, if you remember, fled to Midian. He was a fugitive. And then Moshe Rabbeinu takes his wife and his children, Vayoshev Arza Mitzrayim. And now the Psukim say the following, Vayomer Hashem Moshe, V'lechtich Olashub Mitzrayimah, Re'ei Kol Amosim Asher Samti Biyadecha, that Moshe Rabbeinu was told that there's an arsenal of weaponry that you have, namely a number of nisim that you're going to perform, and the fact that Paro is going to resist, don't be at all depressed by the resistance of Paro. And suddenly, out of the clear blue sky, we have the following series of psukim. Ko amar Hashem b'ni b'chori Yisrael. These psukim are, to us, flabbergasting. We don't understand what exactly the role of these psukim are at this point in time, at this juncture, in this context. Hashem says, b'ni b'chori Yisrael, my son Yisrael, my b'chor, v'omari lecha shalachas b'ni v'yavdeni, v'yimayin l'shalcho, hinei anochi horeges b'ncha b'chorecha. Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm going to kill your oldest son. What is going on here? How do you explain the transition from a general statement of b'ni b'chori Yisrael, that Klal Yisrael is my b'chor, Hashem says, and then a moment later, Hashem is about to kill the Bechor, Moshe Rabbeinu. Why didn't Hashem tell this to Moshe at the very beginning, when he trained him to speak to Paro? That's not at all mentioned in the previous dialogue. Only after Moshe Rabbeinu returns to his father-in-law and obtains permission, and suddenly a new message appears, B'ni Bechor Yisrael, and a moment later, Moshe Rabbeinu's son is in danger of losing his life. Vayi baderech mamalom, the pasuk says, and then Tzipora enters the picture. She performs the bris milah, and that saved Moshe Rabbeinu's child. And if you remember, Chazal, in a very dramatic way, described what was going on with Moshe Rabbeinu himself. Rashi quotes part of it, but we don't understand what is the continuity here. What is the nature of this connection between B'ni B'chor Yisrael and the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu's B'chor was in danger? So what exactly is the intention of the Torah, and how is this to be understood in terms of the dialogue between Moshe Rabbeinu and Hashem Yisbarach? So here Soloveitchik presented what I think is a fundamental premise, a basic hanocha, a yisod, which is really so powerful, contrasting the Bechor in the context of the Ummah Sa'olah, the nations of the world, and our concept of Bechor with a Torah perspective. The whole philosophy of Bechor in ancient times, really, the Rav said, came to expression in that pasuk that I mentioned. The oldest child was always viewed as the strongest child. Essentially, he's the firstborn, and automatically he has a certain kind of primogeniture. He's considered to be clearly the model, as it were, in the entire family. The oldest son is generally capable of exercising authority over his younger siblings. He can practice all kinds of chicanery. He can be a bully. He can be cruel. And often older children prey on their younger siblings. Often older children are terrorists. And when the older child becomes a teenager, so he uses his let's use the term that the Rav used, bigness, to exploit his younger brothers and sisters. And Rav Soloveitchik then addressed what was a phenomena then and is still a phenomena, namely criminal youth, gangs of teenagers who terrorize adults, which is a phenomena for Rav Soloveitchik. He thought it was a new phenomena in modern life. But certainly in our times, we are quite familiar with it. And the notion actually, the Rav said in his days, when he grew up in Europe, the notion of a child robber, a child murderer, was absolutely unconscionable. Never heard of such a concept. And the origin of this is in the parental home, because they utilized authoritarian principles and they utilized different types of sometimes violence or terrorist tactics or bullying tactics or intimidation tactics to discipline their brothers and sisters, or let's say in the backyard, take them out to the backyard for a whopping, as they would say today. And that would be essentially the role of the quote-unquote Bechor. And after a while, we have organizations, we have conspiracies developing. So the Rav said that sociologists and historians speak of the ancient patriarchal society. And one could add it was a patriarchal slave society, he said. We are not a patriarchal slave society. We, Klal Yisrael, From a Torah perspective, we have both a patriarchal and matriarchal society. Patriarchal, of course, means the father. The patriarch teaches the children and arouses in them a sense of respect, a sense of reverence and love. His wish is a command, not because of violent tactics, but they accept his orders out of love. That's a society based on kibbutz of aim, where neither is superior to the other. The Gemara says, Malamit Shehishra Kosov, that the Torah actually has equated the obligation that a person has to his mother, the same as the obligation to his father, whether it's kibbutz of aim, whether it's mara of aim, equal respect, equal love, enjoyed by both. But in ancient society, that was not the case. It was a patriarchal, purely society, and this is relevant to the concept of a bechor, to the oldest child, because he is the oldest and often the strongest, and often someone who, as I mentioned a moment ago, terrorized his younger siblings, brothers, sisters, etc. And there's a cruel tyranny, a tyrannical kind of society that reigns supreme. And the Hebrews, as Rabbi Soloveitchik described them, the Ivrim, what the Torah calls, were not only slaves to Paro, but essentially slaves to the brutality and cruelty of every Egyptian taskmaster, every noges that wielded power. The Bechor is not only the oldest, but he's the strongest. And Rav Soloveitchik said that the one who practiced chicanery and terrorism was not only the czar or the governor of the district, but generally speaking, it was the biggest shegets, as he called them, the shegets of the district, who would actually beat them up. And so, in effect, what Rav Soloveitchik noted is that he spoke actually about Washington Heights, because Rav Soloveitchik said shiurim in the yeshiva, Rabbeinu Yitzchak Ochanan, Yeshiva University, and so there were situations sometimes where people also were accosted by a few, what he called, shkotzim. That's the language that Rav Soloveitchik used. They accosted some young men, some young men of Torah. So the Rav reacted, why didn't you beat them up? You should have responded the way Chazal speak about, that you have to defend yourself. The answer is, there's a certain mentality of slaves that the Ibn Ezra speaks about. And the Shibud is not only to the caprice of Paro, but the Shibud is to every single strong person because he's stronger and bigger. It's a society of tyrants. And they're slaves, and that's exactly what the Bechor concept was among the Ummah Sa'ola, among the nations of the world. It was a concept that was based purely on physical strength and tyranny and cruelty and terrorism and intimidation. A society that's united by fear. That is the cohesive force that brings it together. The Rav said that in the days of yore, he was talking about pre-Soviet Union, the days of Stalin. Undoubtedly, that's how society was essentially run. Probably communist China today is of a similar nature. It may very well be that even under Putin, under his regime, we have a similar kind of approach. So what happened on the night of Pesach? The Rav said something fantastic, spectacular happened on the night of Pesach. Namely, Hashem decided, Vayarog Hashem kol bechor be'eretz Mitzrayim, Bechor Adam ad Bechor Behema. Hashem went ahead and all the Bechorim and Mitzrayim, the Bechor Adam, the Bechor Behema, were smitten, were completely eliminated, were eviscerated. Hashem smote the firstborn. Why? Because he wanted to issue a declaration that our concept of Bechor is not the concept of the Ummah Sa'ola. They exercised brutal authority. They were tyrannical. They were terrorists. They compelled people to comply with their evil designs. Each one was a master of slaves. Each one was someone who was involved in persecuting others. And we know in the davening we say, Uvelo Hehem Asa Hashem Shvatim. When you punish a nation, you don't have to only punish the nation, but you have to destroy their philosophy. You have to destroy their mindset. You have to destroy their Weltschang, their Hashkafa, their gods. That was must be refuted. And that's exactly what happened that night. The night of Leil HaSeder, when Hashem sanctified, Kaddish li kol b'chor b'nei Yisrael, ba'odam v'abahema lihu. We have a completely and totally different concept of what b'chor means. B'chor is not physical might. B'chor is not terrorism. It's not intimidation. B'chor is kedusha. Bechor is responsibility. Bechor is achrayus. Bechor is an awesome achrayus that a Bechor carries. Bechor is a model for the rest of his mishpacha. Bechor is chinuch, being mechanech, directing traffic so that younger siblings could see an outstanding role model of someone who's connected to Kedusha and to Hashem Yisbarach. So that's exactly what happened that night, Leil HaSeder. Namely, what ideology was destroyed? The ideology of the Bechor concept, the physical Bechor concept, the tyranny Bechor concept of the Umas HaOlam was destroyed, was negated, was repudiated. And what emerged? A new concept of Kaddishli Kol Bechor, Petr Kol Rechem, Mimnei Yisrael, Bodem Vavahima, Lihu. That's what emerged on the night of the Seder. And that's why in the Parsha of Bo, this is exactly what the Torah is describing.